Hello and welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little, and this is the time we get together each month and try to figure out how to add clients and deliver truly comprehensive financial services. This program is built around some research that I completed back in 2002 called the Advisor Pact Pledge. The basis of this program is to make a promise, and that is a pledge to each and every one of your ideal clients, and that is to promise four things that our data confirms that affluent clients have given up on finding in any single advisor. So PACT is an acronym. It's an acronym for protection, attention, coordination, and transparency. And in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, one of the courses that is available to you, and I recommend that you retake the module at least once a year, it's called The Essentials of Advisor Pact. And so if you really want to unpack the methodology that will knock your clients' socks off, you will go through that section at least once a year and recommit yourself to not only making this pledge with each ideal client, but revisiting this pledge and making a commitment between you and your service team to delivering on these four promises. Now, I'm going to go through a question that I received this month from an advisor. I think it every month I go through the questions that you all send in, and I try to pick one that I think is the most useful for the majority of you. So we'll do that this month. But if you have questions in between, like during the month, then I encourage you to take full advantage. I mean, that is the purpose of this program, is to get, you know, coaching from me on this methodology. So whether you have questions about clients, or if you have questions about staff, or if you have questions, let's say, about implementing any part of this program, then you will find the Contact Us link on every page in the Advisor Pack monthly system. So just click on the Contact Us link. If it's a technical issue, or if you need to get a different module sent to you in a different sequence, you can just type out your message to our team, and they'll take care of you. But if it's a question for me, in other words, if it's a question regarding this content, or if it's a question you want to run by me related to clients or staff or anything that you're dealing with in your practice, then click on the option to send me a recording. I only respond to the messages that come in through the recording link. So just when you click on Contact Us, you'll see that if it's a question for me, it'll take you to this page. You just click Start Recording, and it's much like a voicemail, but I have found that I really need to get the context of your question. I almost always have questions about your question. So if you'll leave me a recording of what your question is, I normally get all the context that I need in order to answer your questions. Okay, so let's get to the question for today. Got this interesting question from a relatively new member to the Advisor Pack monthly program. It's an advisor here in the US who noticed that I commented in one of the last 2 months sessions. I must have said this in the past 2 months. The question is, you mentioned that the most important module in this program is the process for filling my service team vacancies. Could you give me a preview of that module? I'm curious how long it's going to take to build my team so I can begin charging $35,000 per ideal client. Well, a couple comments first. So what he's talking about here is filling subject matter expert roles. So this is one of the things that distinguishes this program. Really, there is no other program like this anywhere. The objective of our program is to begin building your client acquisition exclusively through unsolicited client referrals. So what drives that? Well, it's unsolicited client referrals are driven by satisfied clients. So imagine clients who are so impressed with what you and your team provide them. You are indispensable to them in all areas of finance, to such an extent that they just can't resist when they're out in the wild, interacting with their friends and family and their colleagues and whatever. And whenever the subject of money comes up, they just cannot help themselves from sharing the good news of you and your team. And so it's that level of client satisfaction that drives unsolicited client referrals. There is no other program that's available anywhere that focuses on unsolicited client referrals and how to build a service model that will consistently deliver unsolicited client referrals. So let's get to it. I think the starting point for thinking about how to fill your team with extraordinary and highly skilled subject matter experts is to start by thinking about how is the industry currently set up traditionally, and to put yourself in the shoes of a client. So the way the industry is set up and has been pretty much forever is that that the more successful and the more affluent your client, the more they realize and recognize how the financial people in their life really need to coordinate. So a client knows intuitively they need to have financial people on their team, and they typically do. So what do? They need to file their tax returns. So they hire a tax expert. Okay. So then, you know, they buy cars. Affluent people have this way of buying and spending a lot of money. So, you know, they buy houses, they buy cars. That brings in the need for insurance. So, you know, these ideal clients, they have insurance people in their life. It occurs to them at some point that if they were to drop dead, they don't want their assets to be an unguided missile. So they hire an estate planning lawyer and they draw up wills and trusts. Then, you know, they accumulate wealth. So these affluent, successful clients, you know, they need somebody to manage their money. So some of them go to the bank, some, you know, and talk to their banker, and some people hire, you know, financial advisors. Some people go into the big firms and hire a stockbroker, or, you know, they go by different names nowadays, but wealth managers. But this is the money management piece. So it's not uncommon for a client to have the money management piece at least partially solved. And then at some point, affluent person may or may not decide that they need a plan and they have a financial planner. Okay, so they have all these things, but the thing about the traditional financial service business model is they are all individually hired. So the client goes out and hires this team, and they typically don't coordinate with each other. They don't talk, they don't pick up the phone and chat with each other. So even if there is a financial plan, which is kind of rare, even for affluent clients, they're paid to do a job. They create a plan. The client pays for the plan, and then they've got a plan. They put it up on the shelf. You know, they do whatever they're going to do with it. But it's not like the financial planner, you know, calls up the tax accountant and the estate planning lawyer and the insurance, the homeowner and auto insurance agents. It's not like the typical certified financial planner contacts the client's other financial team members in order to let them know what the plan is. That typically does not happen. So what are the gaps? Well, the usual gaps for most affluent, successful clients are they really have no overarching strategy. They do have a plan, potentially. They may have paid for a financial plan, But what good is a plan if everybody on the team doesn't know it exists, is not aware of it, and they're not working off the same strategy? So when I say there's no plan, I mean there's no comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy that all the financial members of the client's team are aware of, are on board with. And so that's what I mean when I say there's no plan. Almost never is there a coordinated plan, which means because there's no plan in place, there's no way to measure success. It's funny. You go up to a multimillionaire, and if you were to chat with them and they were being candid, you'd say, are you on track or off track? Well, they might say, well, I'm pretty sure I'm on track. Yeah, I'm on track. Really? How do you know? You know, and the answer is they don't. You know, if there is no plan, there is no way to measure success. Therefore, they don't know if they're on track or off track. That's the truth. And you know, if there's no plan and there's no way to measure success, then there's also no oversight. In other words, nobody's looking over this team of, let's call them, five subject matter experts that the client has hired, and they never talk to each other. You know, there really is no oversight to make sure that the client's objectives are being managed, are being, you know, it used to be called management by objectives. So who on the team has ever raised their hand and said, you know, I'll be the one to coordinate this team. I'll be the one to pull them all together, make sure they understand what the plan is. And, you know, I'll provide oversight to make sure that whenever they make a recommendation, before you see it, I'll make sure that it's in perfect alignment with the plan, or else why make a recommendation if it's not aligned with the plan? So that's the gap. That's the $1 million gap. That's what a client is willing to solve. And the more successful and the more affluent the client, the more they're willing to pay. And you know, depending on their personality type, we insist that you create an ideal client profile. Well, the more of a financial delegator they are, and the more affluent, the more successful they are, you know, this is an opportunity for you to charge a fee to pull all this together for them. Okay, that's the opportunity. Now, in the traditional business model, you talk about clients having all these financial people in their life, the tax accountant, the insurance agents, and the estate planning lawyer. Well, this is how the model is pretty much set up among all these professionals. Because they don't coordinate with each other, this is how the client views them. They're a one-man band. So, you know, the typical certified financial planner, or even the tax accountant, you know, they are an expert in a narrow field of finance. And in that narrow field, they're a one-man band. The question is that what the client wants? No, it's not. And I've got data to back it up. So the question is, if a client's got all these one-man bands that never talk to each other, you know, trying to do their piece of the puzzle for the client's financial life, if we were to pull all this together, what's the standard? So I remember reading a study, this was probably 20 years ago, and I've seen a couple of updates to it along the way. But it is true that about a third of our industry, a third of what we call financial advisors, hold themselves out to clients as offering something called comprehensive financial services. Okay, so what is that? If we were trying to get a picture in our mind of what is comprehensive financial services, well, let's ask some basic questions. What are the industry standards? You know, what does comprehensive financial services actually entail? You know, if a client were to pay for something called comprehensive financial services, what exactly would they get for the fee? Well, there is no standard. That's the problem. In our industry, this term comprehensive financial services, which is on the business card or held out to clients by about a third of financial advisors, it has no meaning whatsoever. It has no industry standard. And what a client thinks of when they think of comprehensive financial services, The data that I've seen is that what's in the client's mind is far different from what the advisor is thinking when they tell a client, you know, I provide comprehensive financial services. So part of this goes to the advisor pact pledge. So that's part of it. So by making a pledge to, you know, for protection, attention, coordination, transparency, that is the first step in being the only game in town. And I can tell you with certainty, and we do have data to back this up, that there, if you will make the pledge, the advisor pact pledge for all four of those client expectations, you'll be the only game in town. The chances that there's another advisor in your community that is both able and willing to deliver on all four advisor pact pledge promises is statistically zero. Now, the study that I commissioned in New York City, so if you live in New York City, there is statistically a 0.89% chance that there is an advisor, near you that is able and willing to provide all four of the client expectations. So, okay, in New York City, maybe you're not the only game in town, but in every other city in America, and we have never commissioned studies in Canada, Australia, the UK, or South Africa, which we have, you know, hundreds of advisors in this system from all over the world, all over the English-speaking world. I have not done this study there, but I do know this. We have looked. We have not actually researched it, but we have looked in London and in Sydney, and we cannot find a single advisor that is able and willing to deliver on all four of the advisor pact pledges. But, you know, pulling things together and providing, being the individual that steps up and says, I'll pull all this together. I will have your back. I will point out conflicts of interest on your financial team. I will pay attention so that if you drift even a little bit off track on your goals, I'll proactively pull you in and get you back on track. I will coordinate all these people in your life. I will coordinate all these financial products that you've accumulated over the decades. I will coordinate all that with full transparency. So investments and financial products and services these days almost always have some form of hidden fees, and you're committing, you're pledging, you're making an advisor pact to flush all those out. But even with those four, what is the actual mechanics of comprehensive financial services? Well, I invented it. I went out and trademarked this term back in 2002, called truly comprehensive financial services. Now, if you implement this system in the way we're going to describe here in this session, because I'm going to walk you through how to build your team of subject matter experts and hold them accountable to, in essence, knocking your client's socks off, well, you're able to use this trademark term. I have given you permission through this program to utilize the term truly comprehensive financial services with the trademark attached. The only proviso is that in the footnote on wherever you use this term, you need to give attribution to my company, which is Comprehensive Advisor Services, LLC. So if you put that down in very fine gray print in the footer, you could use a slide like this with your potential clients. And so the point is, whether you use the trademark term or not, I've figured it out. So I at least have a definition of what comprehensive financial services means. And the first step is to get away from the one-man band methodology. So, you know, a client having a tax accountant and an estate planning attorney and insurance agents, and none of them talk, we're stopped. That stops here, that stops now. This commitment to coordinate means that you are no longer, or soon will be, I realize this is a transition period that takes, in many cases, a couple of years to get to where I'm describing. but your role actually is transitioning away from whatever you think you are. So if you think you're an investment manager or an investment advisor, you're no longer an investment advisor. You are the trusted advisor orchestrating the team. If you think of yourself as a certified financial planner, or if you think of yourself as an insurance agent, you're no longer under this model, that role. Your primary role is the trusted advisor orchestrating a team of subject matter experts for the purpose of coordinating a family's financial affairs. Okay. So I realize that for now, and for many of you for the foreseeable future, yes, you're going to be the one continuing to do whatever it is you do, financial planning, investment management, insurance agent, whatever it is. So you're going to wear two hats for a little while. But what I'm getting at is the primary role that you have is as trusted advisor. So what makes our structure different from the traditional model? Well, it's that in our model, you as the trusted advisor, the orchestra conductor, you're orchestrating a team of subject matter experts. But in this case, you're going to build this team. You're going to have on your team a tax expert, a money management expert, a financial planning expert, an estate planning, or we call it legal subject matter expert. You're going to have an insurance, or as we call it, a risk and safety subject matter expert. So these are the five roles that you're going to fill. So you're going to build a team, and you're going to have your oversight advisors that are on board to serve the team. And so what's your role? Well, right there in the middle. You're the single, simple point of contact. This is what makes life easier for the client. You know, they don't have to any longer coordinate five team members. They just have a single, simple contact, which is you. You're the point of contact. You're the lead advisor. You're the most trusted advisor who coordinates a team of subject matter experts. That makes you the orchestrator of all of this. And that's your primary role. So as you think about, you know, what your role is at going forward, it's to first build the team and then to orchestrate the team for each and every ideal client. And we, in addition to this team, we do have a consistent meeting process in this program. It's called the 3-meeting process. Now, I've talked about this in many, many past webinars, so you may need to go back and look at detail at this, what all the meetings are. Each of the meetings and the 3-meeting process are very detailed. There are outlines available. Each meeting has a specific agenda. But the bottom line is it all starts with the initial client interview. It's at that meeting where, you know, one of the problems in our industry is advisors tend to do all this free work up front, and they don't get paid for all the work that they do. Well, in this client service model, there is one meeting. It's an initial client interview. That's the meeting where you invite those who meet your ideal client profile into the ideal client community. And if they don't meet the ideal client profile, all traits in your profile, then you don't invite them into your ideal client profile. So it's a fork in the road, that initial client interview. And most of you are using the financial roadmap for the initial client interview, which is what I have used since 1999. But regardless, you don't move past the initial client interview unless you're hired. So at that point, you're hired, and then there are 3 meetings. So there are 3 meetings in a row: the implementation meeting, the initial progress update, the comprehensive safety review is the end of that little 1-meeting process. What is the purpose of these initial meetings? Well, it's easy. It's 104 days to allow your team to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, otherwise known as the overarching plan. So this is what doesn't exist. It involves all five team members: tax, estate planning, the certified financial planner, the insurance expert, and whoever else I left off with. Let's see, money management, certified financial planner, insurance, estate planning, and tax. There we go, all five. So those five individuals, all five of them create this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So they have just a little over a quarter of a year to do it. And that's plenty of time. But if you know, we've done whole webinars on what are the elements of that plan that make it different, because if it's not an ideal client and, we're not going to work with them as a permanent ideal client, we are willing to utilize our team to create that same high level plan, for pretty much anyone. We recommend that you don't charge one penny under $10,000. But so what does a $10,000 plan look like? Well, go back. I've covered step by step this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. Exactly what does it look like? How do you create it? So go back and look into that. But the point is, it takes 104 days. So it is a knock your socks off plan that's worth well over $10,000. All right. So then what happens with this, after the plan is created? Well, this is what we call the routine three meeting process. So it goes in like this. After the plan is created, you have the comprehensive safety review meeting. After that, 4 months later, you have a goal progress outlook meeting. 4 months after that, it's the annual review. So you're going to meet three times per year. In other words, once every 4 months, forever. You're going to cycle. This is what we call delivering truly comprehensive financial services. Technically, truly comprehensive financial services means that you're delivering the 10 client deliverables on an annual basis to your ideal clients. And we have modules on that. If you're new to the program, as you go through these monthly projects that we send out to you, we have two of the modules that focus on these 10 client deliverables. So don't worry about that. But as far as delivering that to the client, the delivery mechanism is you meet every 4 months forever, and you cycle through those 10 client deliverables in each of these agendas. So What's the client really paying you for? Well, there are three bottom line client outcomes, which we've covered in past webinars. You can go look those up if you want. But mainly, what's the client paying for? It's to know proactively that they are on track to their goals and they will remain on track. And so what's the purpose of the meetings? Well, it's to cycle through these 10 client deliverables, because things drift off track. Situation with the client changes, situation with the economy changes. I mean, look at all the inflation headlines we're seeing right now. Things change. 2 years ago, there was, less than 2% inflation. It was like, easy to plan around. Now you're at 8, 9 and higher percent. I saw there's a great website called Shadow Statistics, where they calculate things like inflation, the way they used to, things like unemployment and inflation, the way the Department of Labor historically has, and they've kind of used the statistics to prune these numbers to make it look better for the numbers, frankly. But if you go to Shadow Stats and look at what's the actual inflation rate for the average consumer, it's closer to 12% than it is 9%. But whatever, things change. That's my point. Things in the financial markets change. Things in the economy change. Look at world events. Things in world events change. There's a war on the other side of the earth, where they're now talking about nuclear World War III. I mean, it's unbelievable. So you need to meet with your clients regularly. And that is the three meeting process. So in order to get on track and remain on track, it requires that your team have access to your clients at least once every 4 months to get the information that only the client possesses and to make sure that things remain on track. So that's the three meeting process. Now, the piece of the puzzle that is before we get into the actual process of filling these roles, so you get it, there's the client. The client has you as the orchestrator, the lead advisor. You're the most trusted advisor. You're their primary single point of contact. You have brought on a team of skilled subject matter experts to make sure that they have a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy in place. And it you get it in place and you keep it in place. Okay, so that's your job. That's your team. But the client has financial people in their lives, as we talked about earlier. So what about them? Does the client have to fire their accountant to work with you? Does the client have to fire their estate planning lawyer to work with you? No, absolutely not. The client typically has a tax accountant, may have money managers, may have an estate planning attorney, insurance agents. Certainly every affluent client's got auto and homeowners, and they almost always have some life insurance and stuff like that floating around, annuities. So they've got all these people in their lives. So what do we do with them? We work with them. It's not our job to unseat any of these people. It is our job to assess them. You know, we call this the implementation team, and we make it very clear to the client. Look, as much as our team could jump in and do some of these things, if there's a gap on your team, as long as your team is up to the task, and you know that's part of your job, stepping up as the trusted advisor is to provide an assessment of to make sure that each of the client's financial people in their lives are actually up to the task. But assuming they are, and most times they are, that we explain to the client, that's the implementation team. They're going to get things done. So then what's our job? Our team is the oversight team. Our tax person will reach out and coordinate with your tax person. Our estate planning legal expert will reach out to your estate planning legal, you know, your lawyer. And so everybody on the team has an opposite on our team that will help them do their job better. So what have we done that they haven't done? We have put together a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy that is designed to accomplish the client's objectives. So if they initially push back a little bit, and you have to expect some of them will, but that's okay. It's up to the skill of your subject matter experts to reach out to them and explain, you have nothing to fear from us. We are here to serve you. As a matter of fact, we were just hired by the client to fill in some gaps. You know, there was no overarching strategy designed to achieve the client's objectives. It was each independent, you know, tax accountant, lawyer, and insurance agents, and money man, all these people were just working independently. Nobody ever stepped up to offer to coordinate all these people. So we were brought in to do that. And we have created the strategy. So why don't we do this? We will share with you the strategy, what the client's trying to accomplish, and we will work together to serve this client. You know, as you come up with recommendations for this client, let's develop a process where we can, you know, we're meeting with the client every 4 months, three times a year. You know, just let's shift your process a little bit so that your recommendations flow through our meeting cycle. And we will promise you this, because we are seeing the client more frequently than you need to, just tell us what you need from the client and we will take charge of that. We will make sure that you have everything you need by whenever you tell us you need it, because we're meeting with the client on a regular basis. So the way my team has always approached the client's implementation team is to say, look, our job is to make sure everything gets done. Your job as the implementation team is to do everything on the list of to-dos. So let's just work together and let's serve the client together as a team. And that's That's how you do it. So now let's shift to really the question on the table. How do we fill these roles? How do we fill on the oversight team? How do we get our, you know, a skilled tax and money manager, financial planner, and so forth? How do you get all these people in place? Okay. The first step in the process is to have a strong administrative manager. And you're saying, oh yeah, yeah, I've got an admin person in our firm. And many of you don't, but I'm just saying, for those of you that do, know this, it's almost never that person that is able to fill the shoes of the administrative manager role that I'm describing. Okay. So you need a really strong administrative manager. Think of it this way. Focus on the word manager, not administrative. In other words, you're looking for a leader who has managed people, who is in essence going to serve as a strong project leader who can hold you and everyone else on the team accountable. So where do they fit on this org chart? Okay. If you're the point of contact for the client, then the administrative manager, this very strong project leader, is the coordinator for the team. So for the tax expert, money management, financial planner, and so forth, their single simple point of contact and all information will flow through your super strong administrative manager. So in the context of filling these subject matter expert vacancies, then the first thing you have to do is get a strong administrative manager in place, someone that can hold everyone accountable. Well, what's their role in filling these vacancies? Well, number one, they're in charge of the process. So we say they are actually the administrative manager is in charge of filling each SME vacancy. So they have two roles. One is managing the process, and the other is it's their job, meaning the administrative manager's job, to go out and find the candidates. So all the candidates that are interviewed are sourced and found by the administrative manager. How do they do that? Well, again, this is a module in our program. So if you haven't gotten this module, when you get it, we walk through how your administrative manager is going to go out and find all these candidates. But that's the division of labor for the administrative manager. So what's the trusted advisor's role? Well, your role is to interact with all these candidates. So we don't have the administrative manager interview them or even talk to them. So you interact with all the candidates, and you're going to make the final decision on each SME. So you're going to decide, you know, you're going to ask for input from your team. As your team grows, you'll want to get their feedback on new candidates that you're about to invite to join your team. But in the end, as trusted advisor, you make the final decision. So there's the division of labor. Okay, so you've got the administrative manager role filled with a very strong administrative manager who can hold you and everybody else accountable. Second, you're going to fill all five of these roles: tax, money management, certified financial planner, estate planning, insurance. All of these roles are going to first be filled on an interim basis, then you're going to go fill them on a permanent basis. Okay. So if you're wondering, you know, how do I charge $10,000 for a plan if it's going to take me a while to build my team to be able to deliver on a $10,000 plan? Well, this is the answer. The second, after filling the administrative manager role, and by the way, we have two modules just on that, the role of the administrative manager and how to fill that role. And you can always ask for these modules out of order. If you don't have an administrative manager and you've gone past the administrative manager modules, you can always click the contact us link in our system and request those administrative manager modules or whatever modules. You can take them out of order if you want. But the answer to being able to immediately be able to start charging $10,000 for a financial plan and whatever you want for your ideal client fee. I've done studies over in our flagship program, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. The average advisor delivering the way we're describing it here, truly comprehensive financial services, in our system, the average advisor is charging between $25,000 and $50,000 on average. My fee is $45,000, but that's only because I grandfathered my fee long, long ago. And, you know, I stopped accepting new clients. And so my fee is a little bit behind the times. Bill Bachrach highly recommends, you know, $50,000 for this level of service. And when he's saying that, he's envisioning implementing everything we're talking about here. Okay, so you're going to fill all five interim subject matter expert roles immediately. And it just takes a week or two to fill those roles. So with a strong administrative manager, and with some coaching, because don't forget, you're in this program. If you start launching into doing this and you run into obstacles, well, contact us. That's the whole point of being in this program, is if there's no need for you to get stuck or need direction or anything, you contact us. Okay, but just put your mind at ease. A week or two from now, you'll have all five subject matter expert roles filled on an interim basis only, with individuals who are highly technically competent. All right. So you're filling the five interim roles quicker because you're going to turn the process that I'm going to walk through on filling these SME vacancies. You're going to actually turn it upside down. Now, what that means is not going to be clear to you until I actually walk through the process. And so you see how we fill the permanent vacancies. So why don't we do this? Let's review the full process first. And then at the end, I will show you how to take this very thorough process, flip it upside down on its head so that you can fill on an interim basis all five SME roles. Well, whenever I've set about to do this, I've filled the interim roles in 5 days. So for me, it's 5 days. I've had advisors scream that, oh, it takes 2 weeks. I don't see how you do it in a week. Okay, fine, 2 weeks. But somewhere a week and 2 weeks, you'll have all five SME roles filled. So you can immediately begin charging the fees that you want to charge because you'll be worth it. So the first, still about to go into the process, but just this is the last slide, setting the ground rules for filling these permanent SME vacancies. So I'm going to launch into the process, but here are the things that you need to agree or understand up front. First of all, what we've already talked about, your administrative manager is going to manage the process. Not you. Stay out of it. Let your administrative manager manage the process. If they're unable to manage the process, or if after a week or two, it's obviously off track, well, guess what? Your administrative manager isn't strong enough, and you need to kind of go back and fix that. You need a strong administrative manager in place, someone who's both able and willing to hold you and the entire team accountable to our promises and to the process. Okay, so administrative manager manages the process and we fill only one vacancy at a time. So we're going to pick one of the vacancies and fill it, and we're going to fill that vacancy with a permanent candidate before we move on and start filling the next vacancy. Got that? And then the administrative manager is accountable for filling this vacancy in less than 60 days. Okay, and this is a litmus test. This is how I always figure out whether an administrative manager is strong or not. I walk them through this process. I give them full access to the module, walking through this 12-step process to fill subject matter expert vacancy. And I explain that this process is designed to fill a vacancy in less than 60 days. So you think you can do it? I believe you. So let's bring you on, and let's just say this up front. If you fill this vacancy in less than 60 days, then let's admit up front, this job's a good fit for you. You probably are a strong administrative manager. But let's also agree up front, if you're not able to fill this SME vacancy in less than 60 days, let's just agree up front, it's probably not a good fit. So you're going in with crystal clear expectations. You're going in with a timeline. And I'll show you later on, there are week by week checklists. So you know after each week, and if it's a 60-day process, that means it's an 8-week process. So we have week by week checklists for each week. Look, you can hire an administrative manager and you'll know by the end of week 2 or 3 whether they're capable or not. So I'm a big fan of hire fast. Let them go if they're not up to the task. So, you know, I'm first one in the world to give someone a chance and to believe in them and say, I believe you. I believe you can do this, and to let them give it a shot. And but after the third week, if they've been off track every week to the checklist of things that need to be done each week, you just admit it's not happening. It's not a good fit. Let's just agree to move on. So the AM is accountable to filling the vacancy in 60 days or less. I recommend you make that a hard-coded litmus test, and that's the one thing you hold your administrative accountable to. Your administrative manager holds you accountable to all the other aspects of your business. Okay. Finally, administrative managers and updates these week by week checklists, which we will go through later. But I can tell you, once you see the checklist, or if you follow these checklists week by week, you'll know mainly that you're on track each week. And if on one week you drift off track a little bit because maybe you got busy, or maybe you were out of town, maybe you traveled, and so it set the whole project behind. No, that's fine. At least you know you're behind and you can catch up in the subsequent weeks. But it's the administrative manager's accountability to fill this role in 60 days. Okay, how's that for harping around on everything? So with the 10 minutes we have remaining, let me go through the 12-step process, and it won't take long. Now, this right here is what the meat of the module is all about. So when you get the monthly project about the deliverables team recruitment process, it's the entire module is going to do a deep dive into what we're just going to fly through right now. So it's not my purpose to replace the module with today's. I am trying to give you the context around this 12-step process so that you understand why I say this is the most important module in the program. Okay, step one, and again, this is the administrative manager managing this process and pushing us from step one to step two to step three and so forth. So the first step, step one, is to identify which role you're going to fill. Now, we do have a suggested sequence of filling these roles. We recommend that you fill the financial planner first. We recommend that you fill the tax SME second, and so forth. So we have a recommended sequence, but really when you go through the module, you'll understand when you go through this section, the trusted advisor is on the ground knowing what his or her clients need most. So let you as a trusted advisor make the final decision on which role we're going to fill next. So step one, which role are we going to fill this round in the next 60 days or less? Secondly, the administrative manager creates what we call a best-in-class profile. So we have samples of this in the module, but bottom line, administrative manager creates what I would describe as a one-pager PDF. Something that you could attach to an email or you could submit around on job boards and so forth that explains specifically what you're looking for. So create a best-in-class profile. Develop a candidate list. Now, this is where the administrative manager is going to find the candidates. Now, the advisor may have some low-hanging fruit, a few names of people that maybe have been working together with on a referral basis or something, but now we're ramping up these relationships. These are not a referral relationship. The idea of orchestrating a team an oversight team of five subject matter experts. Well, it's all about ultimately, and as I said at the beginning, this may take a little transition for you, both mentally and to get to commit to this, but really where we're heading, if you implement everything we teach, is you're delegating 100% of client service to these five SMEs. It's not like you're still the lead advisor and you do all the work behind the scenes, and then you just have all these five experts kind of checking over to beef it up or make it look better or whatever. No, no. This is a team designed for you to delegate 100% of client service. So the team goal is to consistently exceed ideal clients' expectations. Well, it's up to this team of five to together to do that. It's up to these five SMEs to consistently exceed your clients' expectations. And why do I spend all this time here on developing a candidate list? Because this, if anything, blows people's minds, this is it. Now, I'm not telling you you have to do this. What I'm telling you is we've been doing this for a long time. And as we have worked with administrative managers over the decades, this is the one thing that has always been true. If you're going to find someone, and the criteria for the SME to fill the permanent vacancy is they need to be technically competent and they need to know how to impress clients. I know it sounds ridiculous, but if you were to just remove the requirement of knowing how and making it a priority to impress clients, or as we call it, exceed client expectations, if you were to remove that one and just say, I just want to look at candidates who are highly technically competent, they're a dime a dozen. There's hundreds of them out there. You could fill the position in a week. It's not, thankfully, it's not difficult to find technically competent subject matter experts. But when you add that second criteria, they also have to understand these type of clients and know how to impress them. They have to have it in their heart, have both the willingness and the ability to exceed client expectations. In other words, they have to know how to impress clients and they have to be committed to that. You just add that one additional criteria and now you're talking about one candidate out of 50 or 100. So we recommend that you don't just hire the first good SME that comes along. We think it's better to keep seeking candidates until you have two or three that you would choose from. Like you'd be happy to choose any of these three. And that is puts your clients in the best situation. Now you've got three extraordinary, highly skilled, technically competent SMEs, and you get to choose the one that you're going to invite onto your team. That is an elegant situation. But for you to have even just two candidates to choose from, you're going to need to identify 100 candidates. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just saying that if you want to have two candidates, which we recommend two or three, you're gonna have to get used to the idea of finding 100 candidates minimum to interview. Okay. Thankfully, this whole process is designed as a process of elimination. So I'll walk you through that part right now. How do you even, if you have to go through 100 candidates, oh my gosh, how do you find time to do that? Well, let me show you here in a minute. But the point is, you have to get your administrative manager used to the idea that in our module, we help show your administrative manager how to go find these candidates. Okay. And if you want to ask questions about that, we can spend time in this, monthly session. We can go through that in greater detail. But administrative manager develops a list of candidates. They do initial research. That's generally just Googling them, looking on LinkedIn, looking at their website, getting it all teed up for the advisor to kind of assess this candidate. There is a research call that we do recommend that administrative managers should be able to do, but it's only if you can't find much online. Like if you can't find enough information through their website or through LinkedIn, then sure, the administrative manager can call in to the office as long as they don't talk to the SME directly. You know, somebody picks up the phone and says, you know, XYZ Financial, and the administrative manager just says, my boss was asking if we could get some collateral marketing material from your firm. Kind of looked at your website. I think he was looking for something a little more detailed, or she was looking for something a little more detailed. And so it's an admin manager connecting with another admin person, but that's a research call. It's only done about once out of every 10 or 20 candidates, so it's not done in every case. Only if there's not enough online research to get it done. Now, here is the first step. Step six is the first step where the advisor gets involved. The advisor is the one to pick up the phone and schedule the initial meeting. So, and we recommend that you polish, and if you, when you go through the module, there, you know, on this scheduling the initial discovery meeting, this step six, we recommend that you utilize this to eliminate candidates. You can ask them things like, are you accepting clients? You know, I'm not looking for just, you know, the average. I'm looking for best in class. Would that be you? If so, you know, I'd like to schedule an initial discovery meeting. So if you try to get your administrative support person to schedule these meetings, they're not going to want to meet with you until they understand exactly what's going on. So we've learned over the decades, I've been doing this for 25 years. I can tell you the trusted advisor needs to schedule the initial discovery meeting. Why? Because the SME is going to have questions. And if you don't answer the questions of what you're trying to do here, they're not going to want to spend time and meet with you. Okay, so you'll need to schedule the meetings, but it's a process of elimination. You'll eliminate 30 to 40% of candidates just on the call scheduling the initial discovery meeting. So you thin the herd pretty quickly for people that don't impress you. I mean, keep in mind, they need to be technically competent and know how to impress clients. So if they're not impressing you, ditch the call. You know, just say, hey, it's nice chatting with you. Now I know what you do. If I have any clients that need what you do, I'll be happy to send them over, and you disengage. Only if you are impressed by them, do you schedule the initial discovery meeting. So you'll meet with them. Typically these days, it's Zoom meetings. When I've been doing this, it was always face-to-face. It's about an hour-long meeting. But again, I'll go in at the initial discovery meeting. It's got a specific agenda, and you've got certain outcomes you want from this meeting. But the main one is, you know, do they continue to impress you? Like, is this a subject matter expert that's describing a level of service that could knock a client's socks off? But I can tell you, if something is said in the first 5 or 10 minutes, I find an excuse to get out of there. So I do not spend an hour with someone that I am not just knock your socks off impressed with. I will beg an excuse. I will say, you know, something's come up or whatever the case. But, you know, again, how do you interview at 100 clients? It's by cutting and, you know, process of elimination, like brutal. You cut at the scheduling, the initial discovery meeting. So you cut on the phone, you thin the herd, you cut quite a bit on the initial discovery meeting. And you cut so much so that the next meeting in the process, which is step eight, it's the best in class assessment meeting. You know, you will only have 3 to 5 best in class assessment meetings. And this is if you're interviewing 100 candidates. So that's how brutal you will thin the herd. I mean, if you have 5 best in class assessment meetings out of 100 candidates, that's a lot. You may not be being strict enough on process of elimination. But in the entire 12-step process, this right here is the most important process, because up to this point, they've been all talk. You know, they've been talking a good game. They've impressed you by what they've said. Now they have to show you. You need to see their work product. They need to walk you through their process. You need to go step by step through their procedure What do you do in year one to impress clients? What do you do in year two and three and ongoing? How do you keep impressing clients on an ongoing basis? This is where they actually demonstrate and show you not only their process, but their work product. And this, that's why this meeting is the most important meeting of all. You get to see how they knock the client's socks off. And if it impresses you, then you've got a winner and you move forward. So at that point, if let's say they impress you and you've got a couple of candidates, then you proceed to the internal agreement meeting. This is a meeting of your existing team just to talk about the candidate that you're about to invite onto the team. You've got two candidates, present them. If you've got two or three candidates, present them both to your internal team. Now, at the beginning, it's just you and your administrative manager, but very soon you'll have a financial planning subject matter expert, a tax expert. Include your entire team in on this discussion and see what questions they have. Now, you're, of course, recording all these meetings with these candidates. I recommend that you have your team listen to the recording of the best in class assessment meeting. But long story short, you get your team's decision. Who would they invite onto the team if it was up to them? Now you have their feedback and they can check their contacts just to look into the candidates, kind of do a little bit of a background check on them and so forth. But at the end of it all, you select one candidate that you want to invite onto your team. And this is the third meeting in the process. If you've been keeping up, the advisor's contribution to this process is scheduling the initial discovery meeting, conducting the initial discovery meeting, conducting the best in class assessment meeting. And then this is the third meeting. This is the deal structure meeting. And as its name implies, what's the purpose of the meeting? Purpose is to strike a deal. Like the thing you have not talked about up to this point, because you've been so focused on whether they're impressive or not, and you know, technically competent, capable of impressing clients. One thing you have not talked about is compensation. So that is the purpose of this meeting, is to see if you can afford to bring this individual onto your team. So you invite them onto the team and you negotiate their compensation. So that's the process. At this point, you introduce the new SME to your administrative manager, who will take over the process back again. But you know, at that point, there's finalizing the agreement. So you know, whether you have a written agreement or not, we have kind of an internal agreement that you need to get the SME to agree to. So the step 11 is your administrative manager taking over and getting the agreement finalized, kind of back and forth, just keep pushing the process to get that done. And then present the agreement to the individual and onboard them. So at that point, we hand off the process. There's a 17-point checklist for the first 30 days of onboarding a new SME, but that is a separate process. So we're at the end of this one. You present the agreement, you get the agreement signed by the SME. Now they're a member of the team, you begin onboarding them. So, you know, that's the process. We're over time, so I'm going to fly through what's remaining on these slides. This is the 12-step process that is the module that you will get, and it does a really deep dive into all of this. I will show you that the kind of let you peek at the checklist. So there are there's a TA call log, there's an administrative manager activity, there's weekly results tab, looking right here. So trusted advisor call log, administrative managers call activity. So this is where all the 100 candidates get posted. Only the ones that rise to the occasion are then put over on the trusted advisors call log. There's a weekly results tab. This is the weekly check-in where you have a meeting with the advisor, making sure you're on track. Then you have the week-by-week objectives. So I was going to just for a second, pull that over and let you see, because I want you to get a sense of how robust this process is. Here we go. If you click on this week by week objectives. There you go. Week one objective, you know, date item was initiated, date item was completed. So week one, all these things get done. Week two, all these things get done. Week three, all these things. So you see, there's week by week. If your administrative manager is following this spreadsheet and following the weekly tracking, which you need to hold them accountable to, well, you'll know in a week or two whether the administrative manager's capable of this or not. Okay. So, all right. So feel free. Now that's a Google sheet. So you, if you're logged in with Google, like to a Gmail account or something, then you'll be able to click file, make a copy. And that's how you take this template and use it for yourself. So if you're not logged in to your Gmail or Google or whatever, you'll need to do that, because once you're logged into Google, then you can click file, make a copy, and this is what we use to keep on track for this project. So, okay, so I've gone through the whole process. Now we're going to fill the five SME vacancies on an interim basis in a week's time. How do you turn the process upside down? Well, it's easy. You just look for technical competence. The shortcut is you just seek technical competence. Don't worry about whether they're able or willing or know how to impress clients. We're going to, for the interim SME role, we're going to release that requirement, and that will open up. And if you will add to this, allow for virtual candidates. In other words, you may feel strongly that you'd like your SMEs to all be local in your town. I would say for the interim, look only for technical competence and let them be virtual. So that will open up to a nationwide or even worldwide search. Where do we find candidates on an interim basis? Well, if you have more questions on that, we can talk about it in a future month. Submit a question and I'll deal with it in a future month. But basically on job boards, so we use to fill an interim SME role in 1 week's time, all five in 1 week's time, we use Upwork, we use Indeed, we use ZipRecruiter. Sometimes we use Craigslist, but not in a typical way. We typically use Craigslist in major cities like New York, Chicago, LA. But and remember, you have that best in class profile that you as a PDF that was created. That will allow you to fill all five SME vacancies in a week or two. So you look only for technical competence. Don't, and you make it clear to them, I'm hiring you on an interim basis because I've got a lot of candidates to interview, and you're welcome to throw your hat in the ring if you'd like. But you know, to give me time to interview properly, would you be willing to take the job on an interim basis? So there's the shortcut. If all you're looking for is technical competence, you'll find them right and left. They're all over the place. What they have to agree to do is they have to be able to generate or come up with five skilled action items or recommendations prior to every client progress meeting. So as they're being brought in as an interim, the one thing they have to do is come up with some recommendations for every client meeting. Now, the good news is a technically competent SME has a bag of tricks. They're usually good for about a year, and they can come up with lots of, I'm calling impressive action items and recommendations. But the problem is, if they don't know how to impress clients, they'll peter out. Like once they've gone through their little bag of tricks of high-end, you know, skilled action items or recommendations for this client, they're done. But that's the requirement you put on the interim SMEs. They have to generate five action items or recommendations for every client prior to every client meeting. And then as quality control, because, you know, we've never worked with them before, and we're only screening them for technical competence. You don't just throw open the files and let them have access to all clients. No, give them access to one client, see how they do, assess their work, Just make sure the quality and the quantity of their work is adequate for you. Mainly the quality. Like, keep in mind, this is how you assess technical competence. So, you know, give them a client. Let's say you have a client coming in for a meeting in 30 days. Well, give them that client, see how they do and assess their work. And if they're not good, then go find another interim SME for that role. You may have to go through a couple, but in a week or two, you'll have your interim team in place. You'll have all five in place. So now that you have your team in place, how long does it take to get the permanent vacancies filled? Well, if it takes 5 to 10 months to fill all five SME vacancies. But the good news is you're filling vacancies in less than 60 days. So let's say you bring on a client. From their perspective, they're impressed that there's a new high-quality team member that they're meeting every 60 days. And from a client's perspective, because they're only coming in every 4 months, you know, it's moving fast because that, you know, over two meetings, that's 8 months that, you know, you've filled usually three vacancies. So that's impressive to the client. But it takes 5 to 10 months. What's the difference between 5 and 10 months? Well, there it goes. The key factor is how strong your administrative manager is. How well can they keep the process moving? How well can they hold you accountable to interviewing these candidates and going through the list, like actually keeping the process moving forward? And that's it. That's all I wanted to cover today. I think at that point, you have a team in place, a skilled team. If you'll just relentlessly focus on the team goal, most advisors don't have a team. Most advisors that do have a team don't have a team goal. Set a team goal. We recommend that the team goal be consistently exceeding every ideal client's expectations. And the team deserves to win. So you hold your administrative manager and you hold your team accountable to that goal. The lagging indicator for this is an increasing annual client referral rate. So you've got five highly skilled SMEs knocking your client's socks off consistently. How are you going to measure client satisfaction? Well, the best way to measure is client referrals. And if that's the lagging indicator of client satisfaction, then what's the leading indicator? Well, it's expecting every SME to provide 3 to 5 action items or recommendations prior to every client progress meeting. So, you know, this idea of having a team that's constantly coming up with impressive ideas, you know, that's what clients want. There's some fallout from this. Clients can get overwhelmed, but if you have questions on any of this, just submit your question. We'll deal with it in future months. And of course, my premise to success around all this is that client referrals are the only way of measuring client satisfaction that works. But as a premise, when I got this in my head, this introvert with call reluctance became the number one producer nationwide at my broker-dealer firm. I recognize everyone's a potential real referral source. That means everyone, both clients and potential clients and non-clients. So literally everyone I know, LEIK, that's my mantra. Literally everyone I know is a referral source. That being the case, I need to get people I know to introduce me to people I don't know, not on a business basis, but just developing personal relationships. I need to get my friends, colleagues, associates, family, I need to get everybody I know, literally everyone I know, to introduce me to interesting people that they know so I can develop personal relationships. And by the way, these are all premises. Everyone can help you if they want to. And that's the key. So you add value to every relationship, personal and professional. You want to create a scenario where everyone wants to help you because they can. If they want to help you, if they want to be a referral source, they will be. So advisors that struggle with production have problems in one or four of these areas. They don't track client referrals. They don't recognize that client referrals are the way to measure client satisfaction. They don't realize everyone's a referral source and treat them that way. They kind of think, oh, that's a potential ideal client. That's not a potential ideal client, so I'm not going to talk to them. Well, that's not how it works. Everyone's a potential referral source. The third one, so you get people to know, you know, to introduce you to people that you don't know. I contend very few people do this. When's the last time you asked anyone in your close orbit, I'm talking about friends of yours, just to introduce you to someone interesting that they know? I mean, they know people you don't know. Can you honestly say you ask people to introduce you to interesting people? And then finally, do you add value to every relationship? Obviously, on the business side, that's what we're talking about here, putting a team together, skilled team that can knock their socks off. So you're adding value to clients. But what about on your personal relationships? Can every one of your close circle of friends honestly say that you add value, you help them out somehow once or twice a year in some way that they appreciate? Just make sure that you do, because everyone can help you if they want to. You want everybody to want to. And that's it. That's all I've got. Every page in the Advisor Pack monthly system has a contact us link. So if it's a question for my team, you can type it in on the contact us link. If it's a question for me, you just click this link, leave a voice message for Mark.